Sarah. How are you?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Good. It's so nice to chat with you again.
Oh, good.
I think the last time I talked to you was down in New York. You were in the dressing room.
Yes, that's right. I forgot about that. That's right.
For The Importance of Being Earnest,
yep, which,
which went on to get nominated for a Tony, so that's amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
How are you? Are you tired between the two roles?
Yes. There, you know, I had two yesterday, and I find always the day after a two-show day is pretty, I'm usually pretty tired, because it's a big, you know, it's a they're big, big mountains, both in their own way, and so you know, to do them both on the same day is a pretty challenging feat. But it's you know, they're both so great to do that I can't complain.
One seems internal, and one seems external. I used to talk to Goldie Semple about this sort of sort of things.
I would say, like, you know, I've been saying this, I did meet the festival the other day, you know, where we chat with patrons, and I said, you know, Juliet's like closing your eyes and falling backwards off a huge cliff into a big rolling ocean, where you sort of know as long as you surrender, you will perhaps end up at the bottom of the ocean, but the waves will bring you up again. You sort of, you know, you feel like the ocean is it's okay, it's a safe place. And Blythe Spirit is like driving a tiny, tiny sports car on a highway cut into the side of an incredibly high mountain with a sheer drop to certain death on the rocky rapids beneath on your outside side. You know, it just, it's a completely different experience.
Mm-hmm.
They're totally different.
Well, yeah, because I'll have to ask you this. Is this your... something tells me it's not your first time playing Juliet.
Well, this is a story I've been telling a lot this year. My very first speaking role ever in a play was Juliet when I was in high school.
Oh, wow.
I've been certainly living with her for a long time. And then I did it also when I was in university. A very, you know, like a 90-minute version, a very cut version.
Mm-hmm.
But this is my first time doing it, I would say, having had some time to figure out how to act. this is my first time doing it where I kind of feel like I'm vaguely equipped to tackle her. You know, doing it when you're in high school is, it's a totally different thing. You're completely going on instinct and your understanding of what it is to be a kid, and, you know, but I will say that I am aware that that makes a difference, because my first contact with the words was when I was her age, or close to her age, and so there's a kind of, I have a kind of teenager connection to it, that I'm not sure, like, it's not intellectual, or it's just the fact that my mouth experienced those words, my body experienced those words for the first time when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And so there's a kind of echo of that somewhere inside me that I don't really understand, but is definitely present. I definitely can feel that connection to my childhood self.
It does come out, that's for sure. You know, when I first saw you as Cassandra, I think it's the first time I saw you as an Agamemnon, I thought, you know, one day she'll be here and she'll be Juliet. That was a long time ago. But I've seen many a Juliet at Stratford, but I've never seen one like you, and you kind of reminded me, my favorite film version of Romeo and Juliet is Zeffirelli.
Yeah.
From 1968.
Yeah.
And you had the kind of essence and grand passion that Olivia Hussey has.
Oh, thank you. Well, I think it's really, I mean, it's in the writing. It's so, you know, she has, I think, you know, the greatest things to say about that kind of love probably that have ever been written. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's an extraordinary thing to say, my bounties as boundless as the sea, you know. I mean, the passages, the way she puts words together in her discovery of how to express what it is she's experiencing is amazing.
It is amazing. She's amazing. People use, I use that quote on cards. I used to use it
years
ago.
Yeah, exactly.
But the words are so powerful, and they resonate all these years later. And I think you've done the same thing with Juliet that you did with Laura in Glass Menagerie. You found a role that's, you know, it's a universal role, and you made it your own.
Oh, thank you.
I think it's really neat. I love what Tim Carroll has done. It's a traditional version, so I love that.
Yes.
And I love the fact that you and Romeo, Daniel, are completely alone when you have your first kiss.
I know, isn't that lovely?
Mm-hmm.
It just happened. Tim just said one day in rehearsal to me, we had not ever done it in context. We'd done the dance, and I knew I'd be dancing that farandole. And then Tim said to me, go out with the farandole. No matter what Daniel does, go out with the farandole. So I did. And then Daniel was sort of left alone in the middle of the room, not knowing what to do. And I was looking at Tim. I was in the back room looking at Tim. And he just motioned me to come back in. And by that time, Daniel, at that point, had turned back to the sleeping cousin Capulet. Because he didn't know what to do. I mean, it was a real moment of, I don't know what to do. And when he turned around, I was standing there. And, you know, it's Tim's very, I think his greatest gift as a director, well, I don't even like to say that. I mean, one of his great gifts as a director is that he doesn't ever take anything for granted. There aren't any assumptions. Mm-hmm. And so you get to re-explore the play, you know, as if it was, like, truly as if you didn't know what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully in the way that Shakespeare's audience and players would have had the chance to. You know, we talked all the time about the fact that when Shakespeare's audience went to see this play, they wouldn't necessarily... Well, they definitely wouldn't have known what was going to happen.
No.
And so the sense that it could turn out all right is there very much in the language. You know, it's a beautiful thing, I think, after that long sequence with Juliet, after he's left in the morning and, you know, she has the scene with her parents, and
mm-hmm.
then she goes to Friar Lawrence, and then she comes back, and there's another scene with Mum and the nurse, and then she, you know, has the potion, and then they have that big wailing morning scene in the morning when they find that she's, quote, dead.
Mm-hmm.
And as the bed's going out, you have Romeo coming on top and saying, I had the most amazing dream. I dreamed my lady found me dead, and she breathed such life with kisses in my lips that I was revived and was an emperor, which is an amazing image.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's what they're both going to sort of try to do to each other.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to try and kiss each other alive or kiss each other in death. But at that point, you know, nobody in the room knows that that's what's going to happen. And so it's trying to play the play with the possibility, always the hopeful possibility, that it will be all right in the end.
They will get together.
Yeah.
Well, I think fortune and fate play a huge role. I like to play what if with Romeo and Juliet all the time. Well, what if, you know, what if a couple of seconds would have passed and Romeo could have seen Juliet wake up, or I kind of blame, you know, for the longest time I saw this play, one of the first plays I think I ever saw at Stratford, and it dawned on me, it's like, wait a minute, what's going on with the friar and the nurse?
Yeah,
you know, if it hadn't been for those two.
Well, I think, you know, I think fate really, in so many ways, is really about the choices that we make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Helena in All's Well says, our remedies often ourselves do lie, which we ascribe to heaven. You know, and I think that fate is that thing, is our tendencies, is our, you know. And so I think the nurse, you know, in that moment with Juliet, she makes the selfish choice to save her own skin, you know, because it's going to be big trouble for her if all this comes out.
Yeah.
And, you know, she, and I mean, I won't speak for Kate. Kate has a lot of, you know, a lot of reasons why she makes that choice in the moment. But ultimately for Juliet, the reason Juliet abandons the nurse, you know, says it cuts off that relationship with the nurse, is that the nurse doesn't understand that there is no life without Romeo.
Yeah, that
and
was...
And that to agree to the second marriage is a sin beyond...
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately...
That's a betrayal
it's such a betrayal. Mm-hmm. It's why she says to the friar, you know, I'll kill myself, because the thing is, you know, somebody said, but isn't that a sin? But I think for her, the bigger sin is the spiritual sin is polygamy, for sure, you know, which is the situation she'd be in with Paris.
Yeah.
And also, not only that, you know, but the sin against love, which for her ultimately is the greatest transgression you could make.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and you know, the friar too, I think the friar, you know, he does his best. I think he means well. I think he is actually very sort of brave up to a point.
Yeah, he's a little bit like Romeo and Juliet. He's sort of like, well, okay, there's these two feuding families, but I see past that. I see a kind of hope here.
That's right. And he moves forward, and then, you know, Friar John can't get the Romeo to letter because the letter to Romeo, I mean, because of this plague, which is all people's choices, you know. We're going to quarantine you, and he, instead of finding a way to get the letter to Romeo, he comes back with it to the friar, and, you know, the friar leaves Juliet there in the tomb. He says, because I'm afraid.
Yeah.
I'm afraid. And I think ultimately it's people's fear that, you know, it's Romeo's fear that he will be not a good friend to Mercutio if he doesn't avenge Mercutio's death by killing Tybalt.
Yeah.
It's fear that leads to the negative choices, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Much like in life, you know, it's that pop psychology thing of we either move from love or fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think really in Juliet's case, I think the best thing one could say about her in a way, or the most succinct way to talk about her, is to say that everything she does from love.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't move from fear ever, really, in the play.
No, she's very strong.
Yeah.
She's very mature for the age of 14, and especially, you know, after they are together and they spend the night together, she's like, okay, well, this is what we're going to do.
This is what we're going to do.
You know, those two are amazingly mature compared to all the people around them. They kind of lead, you know, in a sort of, so at the end, you know, it's such a tragedy in so many ways because those two, you know, with the hope of bringing the two, I mean, the family sort
absolutely.
Of, it looks like they're going to unite at the end, but do you really know if that's going to stick or not?
Yeah.
You don't. House is lit.
Yes,
there's kids in the audience.
Yes.
How does this feel when you're on stage? This must be amazing.
It's amazing. It's totally amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's so, just intimate. You feel so connected to the audience, and you feel like you can turn to them and ask for help. And we have enormous freedom for a couple of reasons. A, because it's so lit that you can be anywhere and be seen.
Yeah.
And B, because Tim really wanted us to be free. So, you know, I have the option at any time of running over to somebody in the audience and talking to them during one of my big speeches, I quite often have done that if there's a little girl, you know, in the front row in her new party dress.
That must
I quite
be
often have come over, I don't know if you were there in a night when I did it, but I quite often have run over to a little girl and said, you know what it's like when you have a new dress and you're not allowed to wear it, which is a really great, I think it's, I mean, oh my gosh, when I was that age, I would have thought I'd died and gone to heaven if Juliet had come over and talked to me, and I love it because it the look in their eyes, depending what they're thinking and feeling, completely changes my experience, which is a wonderful opportunity. So I love it. I love the house being lit.
That is great. Yeah, because that's the kind of the magic of theater for you. It makes it really exciting because you never know what's going to happen next, depending on what kind of audiences you have.
That's right. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite part? I mean,
the play?
Yeah, the words are so beautiful. Oh. Is there a favorite, like a favorite monologue that
you have?
Well,
I have, for always, one of my favorite things in the play in terms of life has been, she says to the friar, before she's going to take the potion, she says, "Love, give me strength, and strength to hop afford," which I think is a, you know, I have often kind of quoted that to myself in life in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I will just say, you know, it's, I don't know that I have a favorite part, but every time we rehearsed that balcony scene, I was overwhelmed by how extraordinary the writing is in that scene.
Yeah, it is beautiful. It
and
is
how they,
so romantic.
How they transition from, you know, the beginning to the middle to the end.
Mm-hmm.
It really is in these kind of sections, and it's just profoundly great writing. And I'm always surprised by the next thing that comes out of my mouth, which is an amazing circumstance to be in when you've said these words hundreds of times.
That's true.
To still be surprised. And it's the writing. It's because I always think, oh, we're here already? How did we get here? Which is a great feeling.
How is Juliet evolving with you? I mean, you've been playing her for a while.
Yeah.
How is she doing? And, you know, how is she?
She's good. You know, she just kind of takes charge.
Mm-hmm.
She's a very, you know, it's funny that you should say about Sandra, you know, she's a little bit like Cassandra in the sense that she takes up most of the space, and so I just get to go along for the ride. I don't really get to be in charge of much, which is kind of the best way to be. You know, I didn't get to make a lot of decisions about things. She sort of told me what was going to happen, and I tried to listen, because I've learned over the years that when they're speaking to you in that way, you are best to pay attention. So she just gives a great deal. She's so full of joy and love, and I feel at the end of it, completely exhausted and totally filled at the same time. As Madame Arcati, I was realizing this, you know, in Blithe Spirit, Madame Arcati says, I hope not to go into a trance because it's so exhausting. And then at the end she says, "No, I always feel capital after a trance, rejuvenates me." And I have to say, Juliet's a bit the same. Utterly exhausting and completely rejuvenating.
That's so funny.
Which I think probably has something to do as well with how we come out of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not to give it away in case people are coming into contact with this before they've seen the play, but doing what we do at the end, I think it does kind of move you into the next stage, so that, you know, again, like Cassandra, people used to say, "Oh, that must be very hard at the end of that play to come out of that." But I always used to say, "But the thing is, I get to lie there, sort of in the state of being dead, and I feel the chorus as they speak. I feel them pulling the words. I feel them pulling the play out of me, you know." And it's a bit the same at the end of Romeo and Juliet. You know, I feel the play kind of coming to peace. Because of how we're ending the play.
Because of your actions.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The cast is very strong, too. Your scenes with Scott. Kate, I saw in the Danish play, actually,
oh,
in Toronto.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
She's amazing. And Tom is great. It's a good cast. It's a great cast. It's a very good cast.
Kate is, like, an enormous gift. She's just, like, endless amounts of fun and surprises. And you know, Tom, of course, I've worked with quite a bit now. And
yeah, yeah.
We have this kind of amazing, you know, it's an amazing thing to be standing in a rehearsal hall with him. And there's Valmont and Torvel and
Barry exactly.
and Wendy. And, you know, I mean, you have all of these relationships,
yep.
which I think on the stage just end up looking like history. But for us, they're very specific. So it's kind of amazing.